create the vehicle for the family and the patient to be more engaged in their healthcare decision making and their compliance with medical treatment over time.
I guess I would just I think of it more in terms of how the delivery system is organizing to provide care to that patient, and all the tools that kind of surround that. I think more of patient engagement in terms of the process of talking to that patient, sharing with them information, getting them activated in terms of how they take care of their health on a proactive basis. I just see them as distinct things that do come together, but I still think about the way this is kind of worded in terms of systems, in terms of how the delivery system is organizing itself to support that coordinated care piece.
It doesn't say delivery system.
It says
systems of care. I think domain one is the most fully fleshed out area with many subcomponents, and I don't think we have fully fleshed out patient and family engagement because we don't know as much about it. And I just personally believe that unless the system really, as John was saying, gets involved, it's going to be much harder to get patients engaged. They're not going to be able to do it on their own. They need help. So I just think in terms of how this is structured, it would give Domain 5 a bit more emphasis than it's received.
So if we rename Domain 2 to something like systems and infrastructure and develop new bullets, would patient and family center systems of care be at home now in that bullet and able to serve 1 and 5? As well as others? Would that split the baby sort of biblical solution work, Rhonda?
That's exactly what I was going to suggest, because as you talk about it, I agree with you, it is a system of care, uh-huh. And it goes beyond patient and family engagement pieces that we've identified. And I think if we're talking about system and structure, it seems to me that's where it fits the best now with that new category too.
What do you think? All right, so where we are, we've got one other decision to make here. So what do you think about that as a solution? Keep it there? Would that satisfy everybody? We keep patient and family-centered systems of care right where it is in the renamed domain that really now refers to system infrastructure and policies, and consider it part of that sort of infrastructure that serves all the other bullets. Is that okay? I don't want to go by this without somebody wants to. Okay, so then we need to figure out exactly what to call domain two. Do you have a suggestion, Karen?
Only what it's being called by the others, but you might want to add, because it's called system infrastructure supports. But, George, you added the terminology around policy, and I don't want to discredit that, certainly.
I was just reading from the current bullet.
Sure.
You know, so.
So currently, it's called system infrastructure supports. But this group can, if we wanted to keep the same terminology, and this group was comfortable with that.
Is that what we're talking about? Gareth, you've got a frown on your face.
Yeah, until we were thinking about putting the patient-centered systems back in, I was thinking about improvement infrastructure as a name for that domain. But then I'm not quite sure how the patient piece then fits back into it. But.
Do you think infrastructure, that improvement infrastructure, wouldn't fit in this domain? Or
I could see it fitting much more easily without the patient family-centered systems of care in there, but it could be finagled.
Are those mutually exclusive?
Probably not. I was just trying to figure out. I maybe haven't had enough time to think about it yet, but they're probably not. They could go. They could.
Wouldn't we be trying to see our perspectives in these, as opposed to seeing them completely, mutually exclusive in these categories? So, if you had a quality improvement or patient-focused care perspective, that would be fine in an infrastructure, but also if you had infrastructures that supported, broader things, they would be okay in this bullet? I mean, or not? I mean, I don't want to talk you into it.
No, I think it would work. I don't realize I'm talking about two different things at the same time. I think it would work to have them both in there. I think something along the lines of improvement infrastructure would work, and I think including the patient family centered system of care would also fit.
Okay, so I think we're at the point of being comfortable with that. So now let's get clear about what additional bullets that we want. And I'll come to you in a second here for a second. Just reread the ones that we've got, where we are in the bidding, Karen, before we go to FERSA.
Okay, so if we were building on the prior system capacity, which includes health information technology, but importantly also includes an infrastructure for rapid feedback and dissemination of knowledge, performance measurement being seen as foundational, and it's more of the structure for a performance measurement system. And George, of course, you can speak to that quite elegantly. Workforce development, as Fred has raised.
And as Ira has referred to.
And Ira's referred to. Pardon me, Ira. and I think perhaps, Gareth, this might help you too, is a category around research quality improvement and knowledge dissemination. So that was actually the quality improvement part was teased out as importantly as a separate subdomain. So those are the four as how those were lumped.
Farzan.
Sorry for missing the earlier discussion, so this may have already been covered, but the question of whether the patient-centered medical home is more about the structures and infrastructure, or is it more about the care coordination, if you're creating this new domain, whether it might fit also or as part of some of the other sub-bullets.
Okay. I think it could go either way, quite frankly. Patient-centered medical home is more of a specific concept that I think is, my personal view, associated with one. But I think I could look at it either way. But what do other people think? Well, hold off for a second. I'll go back to you in a second. Rhonda?
I was actually going to make that point because I didn't want to bring it up because I thought it would just make the group go crazy. But it seemed to me that medical home and medical and health home might fit under the infrastructure because it is a new structure and it's a structure that's evolving. And I hope that it's evolving with the patient-centered approach in mind. So I thought it kind of fit there, but I didn't want to bring it up, but I was going to. Thank you.
So we have two. You're going to on a different point, right? So let me come back to you after we've settled this. So other views on the medical home. Go ahead, Nikki.
Can I get the queue?
Yeah, you're in the queue. I'll go to you after Nikki.
So I would say this is a time period issue. I mean, I think the first generation of medical home is more infrastructure and HIT, but it's for the purposes of care coordination, exchange of information. So I think that that's why it was originally under that bullet in terms of helping with care transitions and care management purposes. So it's sort of first generation, second generation discussion that we had earlier. If we're thinking about short-term horizons, it's an infrastructure. If we're talking about longer-term horizons, it's for the purposes of doing all the things that we want it ultimately to do. So I don't have an answer there. I, in some ways, prefer to keep it where it is. And then the elements kind of associated with the medical home are kind of clearly delineated as we talked about them in terms of QI, rapid learning, HIT, workforce. So I'd vote for keeping it as is.
Okay. Other comments about this? Where does medical home belong? Under one or under the new two? How strongly do you feel about it?
Why is it broken out as a subdomain in particular?
What? I mean, you've got it under, so you could try and move to medical home from one to two, medical home is the thought?
That's the proposal. We've had two views in that direction. We've had one view to keep it there. I suspect we're probably divided on it if I called for a vote. And so then I was just testing how strongly people felt about it. And it's an idea, but it's going to be in the subdomain, so you don't feel real strongly about it. So let's just have an expression of opinion at this point. Let's just see how many hands would like to keep it where it sits in domain one. If you could show me your hands now, and then I'll ask if you want to move it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. How many people, and on the phone, would you like to see it? I'm asking for votes of keeping it in one. Okay, how many would like to see it in the new two? Okay, we've got three. All right. So we'll...
Can I just make another comment about it? Is, you know, I like the idea of calling it a health home. I just think giving it the connotation specifically of a medical home as it's being piloted, I think a lot of people look at it as a medical home in terms of the primary care, patient-centered medical home, and I think it's more than that. So that's the only thing that helps.
Thank you for your comment. Greg, did I skip you? Did I not go back to you? On the phone, Greg Paulson.
Stepped away.
Okay. Any other comments on the phone on this point?
Star one to pose a telephone question or comment.
I didn't want that, but...
And no one has signaled.
Okay, thank you. So I think we'll leave it in one then. So I think we're ready to go. Unless there are other issues. No, no, we've got Nikki, you wanted to raise another issue? No, it was your neighbor there, Alyssa. Alyssa.
Yeah.
Yep, I was looking for you.
That was our neighbor. I didn't
know our performance measurement number. So are you okay now? Okay. Now, any other questions about domains and subdomains? Other issues that people want to raise, Gareth, before we go about it?
Yeah, just one quick thing, I hope. At the moment, we've got research quality improvement and knowledge dissemination down, which seems a bit of a mouthful. And I'm wondering if we might just be able to call that improvement capability. Would that be the same? Would that have the same meaning to everybody?
Where are you looking at that?
I'm looking at it on here, but it's on the it's on the bottom row up there as a potential subdomain, is it?
Yeah. So we currently have five subdomains under the renamed domain number two, starting with patient and family-centered systems of care, system capacity in HIT, followed by performance measurement, then workforce development, and then finally, as Gareth pointed out, research quality improvement and knowledge dissemination.
Oh, what do you want to do with that, Gary?
I was wondering about whether if we called it improvement capability or something like that, it would have the same meaning and would be two words instead of quite a few.
I'm not sure if that's about QI or if that's just about dissemination of everything we're learning about. Is the focus just on dissemination or is it on...
It was about the continuum, so the full feedback loop. So at least how this group phrased it, they saw it along a continuum.
So I'm fascinated that an infrastructure support item is research quality improvement. The word research is strange.
It's different from the others. Yeah. Rhonda?
I just have a question. Is that the exact phraseology that was used by that group? Is that what they called it?
So it's health services research, which would be continuous feedback loop into that. So, you know, the more along the PSDA type of cycle. So it was... And Gareth, respectfully, of course, I think it could be simplified. This is just a way it was used to represent that continuum.
The reason why I ask is that since we are referencing another group's work, okay, it might be helpful to keep the same language so it's real clear that that's where the reference is.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't realize it was a direct reference to something else. Sorry.
So the first one, of course, came from this group, which was the where we decided to move the patient family-centered systems of care. But the system capacity in HIT, performance measurement, workforce development, and our little bit lengthier research QI and knowledge dissemination are referenced from prior.
Okay. So I'll call them myself. This is my individual opinion. I think quality improvement is quite different than research and knowledge dissemination. Improvement science is about operational improvement as much as it about incorporating research dissemination of knowledge. I mean, I think of them as different, related, and along a continuum for sure, but different. But I don't know how others think about that. Ira?
Is there a comma missing between research and quality improvement? Is it research on quality improvement, or is it research?
Comma.
Quality improvement and knowledge.
Right.
George,
in the spirit, you know, things were split and then they became lumped only for simplicity. So we could certainly decouple it if you feel, if you want to know some history. I mean, the group, pardon me. Tom, you might have some thoughts on it, too.
Shall we leave it as it is, or shall we break it into two?
I know what that means. I didn't know what it meant before the college moment. That makes sense to me. The research was not modifying quality.
No, it was not. No, no, no.
Because with the comments, yep. It seems to make a lot more sense.
Okay. Shall we leave it as it is? Okay. All right. All righty. So I think we're now ready for voting. Right? Any other comments before Gareth? Okay, John.
We are voting as what today is, right? And what the priority should be today.
Right.
Okay.
So let me think of where are we in this process? Are we going to
lunch?
And then we're going to come back and do our dot voting after lunch.
After lunch, we'll have lunch from 12 to 12:30, and then Helen Burstyn will present, along with Farzad Mostashari, a final HIT meaningful use gap review, and then we'll use that and the disparity sheet and the new domains and subdomains that we've teed up for the voting.
Okay. Did everybody get that? So we're going to get more background in terms of HIT. You're going to keep in mind the disparity stuff, and you're going to have a new menu. So we did not ask anybody who couldn't hold multiple concepts in their mind to join this committee. So let's take a half hour for lunch. Okay. It's a few minutes past 12:30. And I know that some people are still eating. That's just fine. We're getting to know each other, so I guess continuing to eat and talk is fine. At this point, we want to shift, and we want to do a little bit of background on the HIT. And going back to hockey again, we are... interested in having some orientation to Wayne Gretzky and where to skate to, I think, right? In
Absolutely.
Terms of HIT. And this conversation is not just for your general edification, obviously, but it's obviously for us to listen to and integrate and consider as we do our exercise later in the afternoon. You didn't get ahead of time the slides, but you do have a handout at your place that it are the slides so that you can follow along. So without any further ado, we have Helen Burstyn.
Again.
And go for it.
Well, I think this is my third appearance before this group on HIT, so three is a charm, right? Thanks, folks. What we're going to do today is actually, and I'm not doing this alone, thankfully, Farzad, is here as well. So I'm going to do an overview of sort of where we've landed to date on some of the work we've been doing with the Gretzky Group that I highlighted for you over the last couple of meetings, and then turn it over to Farzad to kind of take it to the next level and really think about how some of what this work has done to date influences perhaps where this group might think through in terms of the prioritization and the rankings going forward. Who's... You have slides. Okay, next. just to remind you, we were asked to do a project by HHS, specifically through Farzad at ONC, to try to identify potential 2013 meaningful use measures. And our goal there was to specifically look at measures that were out there that would fit some of these prioritized measure concepts, and I'll go over that in a moment, but really aligning to the two-dimensional framework you guys have already been working through in terms of those cross-cutting high-impact areas as well as some leading conditions, and thinking about whether some of the measures already in the NQF-endorsed measures portfolio could potentially be modified to fit, whether there are measures in the endorsement pipeline that have already been submitted that, again, could be brought to bear, And then finally, whether there are measures out there that are already in current use by leading health systems. And here we mean both public and private. We queried most of the sort of leading edge institutions, systems who have HIT systems in place, as well as some of the key federal systems like VA, Indian Health Service, and then subsequently HRSA, to get their lists of measures that they already have incorporated into EHRs to say, okay, here's potentially where you could go and bring those forward. And we also tried through this process, and you'll see through the way we ranked these, did some ratings on a set of criteria to identify where there are some measurement gaps as well, which is, I think, the thing closest to where you are today. So next, Lady. So what we did is really try to synthesize input in terms of thinking through what were those high-priority areas. We got lots of federal input from this Gretzky group we've talked about last time, of these sort of leading public and private sector groups who've been thinking a lot about how HIT comes to bear in terms of meaningful use. And then finally, as I mentioned, this environmental scan of the available we specifically asked for EHR-based measures, measures they're already doing right now, built into EHRs, that they could put forward to us. Next. I want to spend a moment on these criteria because I think we previewed this for you one or two times ago, and they have changed pretty significantly, actually somewhat influenced by some of George's comments, actually, on HIT sensitivity, as I believe, and others, and want to just briefly go over these with you. So the first of which was, of all these measures we were looking at, and we truly have probably, you know, 1,000 probably when you add through all the different health system potential measures. We first looked at state of readiness, and that is, again, more just centric in terms of thinking about, is it something already NQF endorsed? Is it something in the NQF pipeline? Or is it something that's already developed out there, just not yet submitted? Or is it something that really needs de novo measure development, a concept, a worthy concept not yet ready for prime time? And the second one, which you've seen before, HIT sensitivity, has also evolved somewhat, and actually, based on the call we had last week, Farzad, I think, continues to evolve potentially in terms of thinking about where do we have evidence that the measures built into EHR systems with implementation of relevant HIT functions, like clinical decision support, reminders, whatever the case may be, could result in improved performance and outcomes. The third one was added since, I think, our last discussion with you, and is, I think, probably one of the most important, as far as I will talk more about this when I'm done, which is promoting parsimony. So the idea here is that if you want to get to a relatively small set of really important measures going forward for these purposes, how might you look towards what that parsimony would be based on? And here, the idea was looking at whether those measures would be applicable across multiple types of providers, care settings, and conditions. And, in fact, most of what you have on your prioritized gap list are, in fact, those more cross-cutting, excuse me, as opposed to condition-specific measures. The fourth one was about preventable burden. We initially had burden of illness and really moved towards the idea of preventability and evidence that you could support improvements in population health and reduce burden of illness as a result of focusing on measurement in these areas. Now, I separate out the last two, although we also did rate each of the measures that we identified endorsed pipeline or out there in the universe across these full six criteria. But these last two are really important and I think in some ways speak more towards the gaps, more towards the future. The first was whether that measure could actually help support health risk and outcomes assessment. Could you actually support assessment of patient health risks that could be used for either risk adjustment, for example, incorporation into a measure of somebody's clinical risk status through a Framingham score or something to really better precisely specify the right population, look at change in outcomes or cross-cutting measures that would get at functional status and overall risk. And the last one is especially important, especially when you think of terms of hopefully not too future tense, but the ability to have interoperable systems to allow you to get at longitudinality, to look at measures across time. And here I know Karen talked earlier about the patient-focused episodes. This was the idea of thinking longitudinally condition-specific patient-focused episodes of care. So those were the criteria that we rated all the measures on. At this point, this report has been, draft final report has been submitted to HHS, and we've gotten comments back. We're revising it. As soon as everybody feels comfortable, we'd be obviously happy to share that broadly with all of you. The next thing the group, Gretzky group, also did, in addition to thinking through what are those key cross-cutting prioritized domains as well as a set of criteria to evaluate the measures, was also to say, is there a set of, among the conditions that we listed most of the leading conditions and looked at measures. I'm sorry, go ahead. John.
I'm sorry, you're getting into traffic area, but just to summarize where you are today, one sort of enormous gap that I don't see in this list is sort of interoperability. I mean, different healthcare environments, different health systems, you know, with very different, you know, HIT infrastructure support their function would benefit enormously from being able to communicate and share across systems, and yet that's not sort of here. Is that a distinct sort of somebody else's job or...
Take that. Yeah, that's my job. There are, as part of meaningful use, there are a set of functional and interoperability type of measures, and then there are specifically quality measures that are to be reported from individual providers' electronic health record systems. So there are criteria for interoperability, whether it's lab results being transmitted in a structured way, whether it's patients getting their records in a format that they can use and reuse, whether it's referrals and so forth. So there's a set of functional measures or structural measures, you might say, that are separate from this discussion, and then there's a set of the quality measures. Now, you could say, and I think it gets somewhat to the issue of HIT sensitivity, you know, do these the kinds of quality measures we want to develop for meaningful use, would it make sense for them to prioritize and put a high premium on quality measures that require interoperability? So that may be what you're getting at. But
what I'm really getting at is the ability to think about these measures is strongly influenced by the ability to bring in existing information from other systems because the redundancy of entering data in order to fulfill a quality measure is a horrifically burdensome and almost infeasible task. But if you could be pulling it in from other systems, then it opens up the scope of things that we can consider when trying to come up with quality measures associated with HIT. And so that's why I had to pause you just for a second because you're just blowing right through this, and I just had to understand, you know, in my sort of limited way of thinking through this, what is the portfolio of things we might be able to consider drawing upon versus how narrow do we need to focus?
Right, and some of that came into being in terms of that last criterion, John, of enabling longitudinal assessment, exactly that. There are some measures, which is why I think some folks were thinking maybe some of those kinds of measures are better potentially moving, optimistically 2013, maybe really realistically 2015 meaningful use, where you do have that hopefully more of an assurance that you will have that interoperability to move there.
Well, nothing will push interoperability faster than making it a 2013 measure and saying you've got to be able to do it. So.
My question is about, and I know we're in the middle of your presentation.
I don't care.
On the criteria, explain why promote parsimony as a criteria.
I'll start and then turf it over to Farsad. I think the idea was we didn't want to necessarily feel like there was a need to introduce scads and scads and scads of measures for this purpose. And I think the idea was to say, is there a reasonably small, parsimonious set of measures that are more cross-cutting that could be used to really drive meaningful use and improvement in some of those domains? Is that about right, Farsad?
I'm going to talk a lot about why I think parsimony is a key and oftentimes neglected criteria that we should be applying.
You're going to talk about that?
Yeah.
And then just briefly, we also, and I realize I am sort of blowing through this really quickly, and we will be happy to share the report when we can. There was also some thought as well, and I know you haven't been very condition-specific here, but I thought it might be intriguing to think a little bit about this concept that the Gritsky Group also talked about, of identifying a set of what we call tracer conditions. And the idea here was, is there a set of conditions that you would specifically select because you can get to that longitudinal, they're especially sensitive to being able to look longitudinally interoperable systems, for example, with a set of some factors that we looked at to pick at this. So, for example, applicability to a broad patient population as opposed to something that's just the old or the young. Are there some of those conditions that would cross that patient population and allow us to look more broadly? Wanting to have a mix of both medical and surgical conditions and procedures with definitely some preference towards preference-sensitive procedures as well. Conditions for which that longitudinal focus would be especially important. And then finally, not wanting to reinvent the wheel, there are just so many intersecting circles at the moment of lots of quality initiatives happening in communities. The idea was that would some of those conditions align with selected conditions that are already part of existing efforts that are ongoing, like the accountable care organization pilots and the Beacon Community Project. So just a couple of examples. Depression was one of those conditions that seemed like a very logical one where there's clearly a longitudinality to it. It affects a broad range of the patient population, and it's already on most of the lists for these other sort of major areas. Total knee replacement is one you wouldn't have necessarily jumped to, but it's an excellent example of where you could bring in the patient functional status, be able to sort of explore these delta measures over time, patients' improvement, for example, as opportunities to specifically be thoughtfully bringing in, for example, patient-reported outcomes around improvement in functional status. So things along those lines, some of the usual suspects, John, you wouldn't be surprised, but certainly, you know, coronary disease and CHF obviously fit that bill as well, so diabetes. But we want to at least say as a starting point, is there a fairly narrow set, and I think ultimately we had put forward to HHS about 7 or 8, including labor and delivery, for example, something that often doesn't get on that list. But again, if you think broadly in terms of the patient population, you would really potentially want to look at the longitudinality and the issues around labor and delivery. So just a sort of a food for thought for you more than anything else. And lastly, what I did was I went to the I went to our grid that we had provided to HHS and just specifically pulled out the ones where people had identified this is a really important measure concept. And when we did this very, you know, extensive environmental scan, we found nothing. So just as a sample to sort of whet your appetite in terms of thinking through these issues. Again, we talk a lot about population health and community measurement, not a whole lot that we were able to identify. Medication safety, one I was actually just mentioning to Farzad and George, it's pretty low on that list there, and yet there's some real potential for what's possible in EHRs. So the example here was, for example, being able to incorporate information from adverse events in different sites within a healthcare system. We did actually find ultimately two health systems who do have a very nice adverse drug event measure that we could potentially bring in. Adherence to medications. We've got some measures we've already done that are some, I think for the most part, claims-based measures looking at pharmacy claims to look at adherence to medications, chronic meds over time, but they don't bring the voice of the patient. They're just, you know, from the voice of the claims data. Should you potentially think very broadly about what you could potentially do for meaningful use in bringing the voice of the patient in through a portal, through a PHR, whatever the case may be, for them to self-report on some of these issues? Use of generic medications, for example. Reducing the cost of redundant testing is a really interesting one and really found no examples of it out there, one that's been something people have focused on for a long time. And it's one of those exact areas I think you were getting at. If you don't have interoperability, you can't know what you can't know. You can't see, in fact, that I ordered that CBC and it was actually done by the doc before me. The provider in the hospital. So that's a really important one that I think does sort of move towards that need interoperability to get there, and we're hoping to see some measures do that. Even ones like closing the referral loop. You know, if a patient was referred to another clinician, did they get seen by that clinician and the loop get closed, the referral note goes back to the person who referred them, things like that. Again, really exciting, enticing kinds of measures, not quite ready to do, although there's some measure development work going on. And then lastly, not surprisingly, given where you had it on the list of prioritized domains, general health status. Really wanting to think about how does functional status and health status fit into this overall measurement rubric, and especially this issue of the delta, so which we found some examples of some health systems taking patient self-report or patient functional status and looking at two points in time, a delta, for example. Minnesota Community Measurement does that with a depression, the PHQ-9. Cincinnati Children's has some very elegant measurements for patients with special health care needs with specific conditions and a change in very specific, you know, headache pain scale, delta over time. So I think there's some examples of where people are going there, but a really important area. And one of the last things is we also try to identify as part of this report, all of these very exciting areas also open up a host of methodologic issues like this delta that I think we also are hoping that, you know, HHS and others can help us really think through how do you handle deltas, how do you bring that forward. I'll stop. Hey, John.
Since this is under the title of meaningful use and nursing homes and home care and hospice and LTACs and IRFs and all that are not included in meaningful use, and you use the term longitudinal, is this report going to address all the, because 40 to 60% of the people discharged from home, from physicians and hospitals go to a nursing home or home care. And I've been on all these other committees, and Farsad knows about it, that I keep saying, you know, we keep sending episodic information from a hospital or a doctor. Nobody talks about receiving it, which we have to receive. And then when it, heaven help us, they have a rehospitalization, we have to send back to those guys. And nobody's talking about receiving it. Everyone's talking about transmitting and not receiving. Is your report looking at this? If you use the term longitudinal, you're not looking at what I just said.
We did not restrict ourselves to what was specifically indicated as meaningful use. We looked longitudinally. But I also have to tell you, now having looked at, you know, I think it's 15 health systems measures, I didn't see any either.
Well, I reported some. Yeah. We reported to Janet, because Janet agrees with me. And I did do columns on the whole meaningful use quality things that said home care, hospice, and skilled nursing, especially off of the MDS-3 and the OASIS type things. But they don't go anyplace because everyone says to me, you're not in the legislation, so therefore we're not going to consider it, which is completely illogical to me, since everything does go and we want people to stay at home. Yeah. And anyway, you all heard my pitch before, but it's my windmill. And every time there's a report that comes out that doesn't address this issue of receiving and transmitting information and just holds it to the episodic providers, doesn't really get us to longitudinal care, which is, if, as I said earlier, if you had true longitudinal care of proacting and preventive medicine, you wouldn't need a hospital except for accidents and people like me getting old and one of my systems goes. You know, anyway.
So let me start by saying that this is a specific point of view that is informed by a specific need, which is the meaningful use program, the meaningful use of certified electronic health record technology. So it's going to represent a particular approach or particular need. My hope is, though, that there will be something in here that that you find of interest or of value as you're considering the broader issue of priority gaps for measure development. The first characteristic of this program is that it should be applicable to all sorts of eligible professionals. So this is not a, you know, it's not a sufficient to think about, you know, a end-stage renal disease set of measures or primary care set of measures. As part of this process, we heard a lot from all sorts of specialists that, you know, what does that have to do with me? I want measures for me. And the drive, the one possible outcome of that, of trying to meet that need, would be to have measures for every specialist and subspecialist and sub-subspecialist and try to meet the desire for measures that matter to the provider that way. And I think that way for us lies madness. Particularly since we are, this is meant to be information that can be routinely collected through information systems as part of delivering care. So if you start getting into all the different data types, all the different data elements, all the different standards for all the different subspecialists, for all the different procedures that they want to do, you know, it's game over. We may as well, you know, give up before we start on that. So, and the burden that it places on the industry, on the electronic health record vendors, on the providers to achieve that, I don't think that is a feasible approach for us to take in terms of meeting that imperative of having measures that apply to a wide range of providers. Yes?
But, I mean, I think you're sort of creating an extreme. You know, there are certainly broad measures that could be applicable to all healthcare settings, quality, you know, doctor-patient communication. That's a lame example, but you know the point being
that
you could come up with things that would be applicable across, you know,
yes,
all providers, all healthcare encounters. But then there are also target conditions. We've spent, you know, months working on sort of prioritizing them, where you've got to have a deeper dive and have much more, you know, rich data embedded in cardiovascular disease, you know, in an unbiased way is a fabulous example of such a condition because, you know, it's such a big cost, so prevalent. You know, it leads into the nursing home and ultimately the palliative care issue as well. And so I don't think, I mean, yes, there's a lot of madness in having to do this. It's a lot of hard work you got before you, but still, you got to, you know, it's got to get done.
Thank you.
Let's let Farzad get his comments on the table because I think there are.
I'm coming to that. Yeah. I'm coming to that point.
So let's not interrupt him anymore. Why don't you go ahead and make your comments and then we'll get into the discussion.
I thought we were having a discussion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure, no, we sort of were, but I think it actually, in order for us to stay on our time, if he can get his point of view on the table and help us understand where meaningful use is going, then I think we can have a more coherent discussion. So. Okay, let's do that.
The second characteristic we were looking for in the quality measures was for the quality measurement to really drive use of quality improvement tools that are part of the electronic health record. So these are not disconnected pieces that you have on the one on the functional side. You have use of registry functions, patient reminders, giving patients the copies of their records, decision support, CPOE, and on the other side you have and having problem lists and medication lists being gathered, and on the other side you have quality measures separate from each other. These were meant to work together, and this was meant to be not quality measurement as, you know, 18 months later we'll tell you what for, you know, some small sample of your patients what we think your quality of care was that you can put in the waste bin. It was more, can we create the electronic health record as a tool for quality improvement, for the providers to know the quality of care they're delivering, and to for that to motivate them to use the tools that are part of meaningful use to address and to see improvement in those quality measures for themselves. So this is part of where we're talking about health IT sensitivity, is not only is the data feasible to be collected within the electronic health record, but that it drives use of the meaningful use advanced care processes that are there. The other characteristic of our program, which may again may be more broadly applicable, is that we had broad ambitions. This was not just about improving safety. It wasn't just about improving care coordination. It wasn't we really are the goal of the meaningful use program, and the matrix is derived from the NPP. And our goal really is to drive and demonstrate improvement in each of the domains. So we didn't have a choice to say we're going to pick whether which one's more important. Is longer life more important or healthier life? Is safe healthcare more important or patient-centered care? Is efficient care more important or coordinated care or dying with dignity? Those are all issues that we set out to address through the electronic health record. So we have lots of different providers and lots of different measures and lots of different domains that we wanted to address. So that drives a need for parsimony, to say we need to find measures, a few measures for each of these domains, just a few, that would be collected with the smallest number of data elements that could feasibly be collected, that would be applicable to the broadest number of providers that it could be applicable to. And these should be measures that matter, measures that focus the mind, that communicate that this is not just about a technology project. This is about something that matters to people more broadly. I got to say, and the other reason to aim for parsimony is, even though these reports from the electronic health record include all the patients' encounters, regardless of insurer status, there is also a sample size concern. As we get into individual providers. These are not large hospital systems. We're talking about single practices. So being able to have the measures include the broadest number of patients as possible helps make those quality measures meaningful and the differences between them more meaningful. If you have a measure for medication safety, that is much more likely to have a larger sample size than if you have a measure for a very small subset of your patients. So these are all things that have driven us to really think about parsimony in a way. And it is not meant to limit, to say that this is the only thing to care about, but something that is meant to exercise more broadly to focus
but exercise the use of the electronic health record. The other thing that I think we feel is, you know, determining priorities for a measure development agenda for meaningful use. It's not about finding more domains or more, you know, conditions or more measures. It's using this as an opportunity to get better measures. And I think there's a risk that we, you know, we keep doing this, right? Every time some new thing comes on with a time urgency, we say, well, we're not going to have time to do this right. Let's just look to see what we have lying around. And then the next time it comes around, then we do the same thing again. And so we end up, you know, with the measures in large part that we have always had or have had for a very long time. So part of what we're aiming to do here is to break that cycle a little bit, using this as an opportunity to say, what is the measure we wish we had? And, you know, instead of did the patient get a, you know, how many people did you do a blood pressure screening on? How many people's blood pressure did you improve? So those are the kinds of, you know, priority gaps that we hope to be able to address through this meaningful use agenda that, again, we hope will have some resonance at least or import for your work more broadly.
You didn't tell us about what you learned from all the different systems, or is that going to be in the report?
That's going to be in the report.
Okay. Well,
although, I'll tell you, what was very interesting, I think some areas where we thought there were some clear gaps, there actually is some remarkably innovative stuff happening at these leading-edge institutions like where you reside. So it's exciting to see that there's, you know, some of this is also a timing issue, though, also, as far as that, in terms of being able to get measures ready. The idea of doing de novo measure development from scratch now to meet a 2013 deadline is going to be pretty hard. You can modify, you could really significantly redo, recast, get to what you wish for, but you're kind of starting with the nidus of something that's already out there. And that's what was exciting to us, was to see how much really neat innovation stuff is actually out there, innovative stuff is out there.
I forgot to actually address the point that I promised I would address, which is around the core measures. Our approach in the first stage of meaningful use to the parsimonious core measures that matter, that we asked all providers to report, was to exactly do that, to focus on the conditions that are so important, so pervasive, that arguably nearly every provider should pay attention to it. Smoking status. Whether you're a dentist or a dermatologist, there's good evidence that knowing about the smoking status of your patient and talking to them about smoking can have a tremendous impact from your perspective. So BMI, blood pressure, smoking were kind of highlighted not because, you know, purely on the basis of what has the largest preventable burden of impact and affects, you know, so many parts of the human body and conditions and providers that it could be seen as nearly universal priority.
So comments, questions? Rhonda?
I have a construct question on this. Because as I think about meaningful use, it can have so many connotations, certainly from the provider's perspective, in terms of their managing a case and keeping a record on their case longitudinally. But then there's also an issue of what we would call informed type information that actually helps the provider to understand whether or not their management of hypertension is as good as physicians out there. So I guess it kind of raises a question for me, as we're talking about parsimony, are we talking about consistency of measures that can, and this goes to that interoperability, is there going to be a stream of information that's going to flow somewhere centrally so there is some kind of benchmarking that goes on so that people can see if I have a person that has these characteristics, they are likely to have their blood pressure come down this quickly or so forth. Just trying to get to what's the construct around meaningful use beyond just looking at a single patient and making decisions based on what we have on that patient.
I think you're getting at the broader architecture for quality measurement. And what we have
today, just a couple of things to note. What we have today in definition of meaningful use and certification of products, and anything else that we do that would be different from this would require separate rulemaking, which we anticipate to do probably on a periodic basis. But what we have today is reporting, calculation and reporting of summarized quality measures to CMS and the states for Medicare and Medicaid, respectively. It is not a requirement that you put patient-level data in a central repository or data warehouse, but summarized data could be used to provide comparative statistics for this is how you're doing versus others similar to you on this measure. There is nothing to prevent a provider from utilizing a data warehouse, a professional society, or other quality measurement organization to perform that quality measurement for them and to be able to have that be a resource. But we are not currently, the rule does not envision a, you know, single data warehouse in the sky that patient-level clinical data from all electronic health records is gathered up for comparative purposes.
Just one thing to add, I think what's especially exciting as well about an EHR is being able to look at the delta for an individual patient over time. So being able to look at where I got them, their A1C may be 14, they've newly diagnosed, I can get them to 8. And it's also really important you start thinking about community providers and issues of safety net providers, for example, being able to look at that delta or that movement towards a goal as opposed to just the absolute threshold is also an exciting opportunity that we've not had before. Also, going back to Farzad's earlier point about the ability to get data quickly, not waiting 18 months to see how you're doing, also allows you to at least benchmark within where you are in a way that really enhances our capacity we've not had before.
So does that mean that the measures will be standardized? So as position A, position B puts it in, it will be the same?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll make my comment now. I understand now parsimony in the context of your statement. Very, very helpful, Farzad. And I think there's an important point to be made here in terms of any reports that come out with respect to this. Because I think that taken on you didn't attend this, but taken on their own, this set of slides does not give the context that Farzad gave. And that, I think, is absolutely critical to the concept of parsimony in my own mind. Because I understand why a government program that's trying to start out and encourage meaningful use of HIT centrally for the entire country would start using a parsimony principle. Because I think the issues that you laid out in terms of complexity, the number of issues you dealt with, and so forth. And yet on parsimony alone, when I think about HIT systems as from a care delivery standpoint, irrespective of the central government task or the meaningful use task, I think the main advantage of having an HIT system is the mass customization and tailoring of the information by specialty and situation, which actually means embracing that diversity and actually doing the opposite of parsimony. And the example I have is the example I gave earlier and teed up for Janet. So just this week had a conversation with a specialist, several of us, specialists from the Mayo in pulmonary disease who came in to have a conversation with us, but in the course of that, critiqued the current measures for asthma and COPD that are well-established measures by a number of the measure developers in terms of how they were ineffective in really addressing the key quality issues, and then talked about an instrument, a multi-item instrument that would be like a PHQ-9 for depression that you would measure a delta on, that would be ideally deployed in an automated medical record environment for that subset of patients. And, you know, it really raises the issue of using the automation to actually embrace the complexity and allow you to tailor quality measures that are very meaningful for the pulmonary medical subspecialists or the people dealing with that disease in a very specific way. But I understand why we would want to start with the common things that go across.
So I think your challenge is to communicate that that's like a first step, if that's what you believe, and that through this program you're not going to be, you know, designing the HIT system for the country. You actually need to give permission for people to, you know, to embrace that diversity. And I would think that from NQS perspective, you would want to be very careful about making sure that these principles, you know, are clearly tailored to the government purpose of getting this program rolled out and implemented, and to send the message in the appropriate way to the, because I would, you know, argue that in the long haul, the whole advantage to having HIT systems is to free you up from the fact that the way we currently collect quality measures and do quality improvement projects on an organizational practice level, our capacity is very limited by the techniques we currently have. And what you want with automation is actually to increase your ability to reach and have productivity. Otherwise, you're not taking advantage of the tool in the sense of really tailoring the work, you know, in a way, you know, where you meet a patient, they have a complex problem, up pops the set, you deploy it against that set of patients. And that's, you know, it's a much, much different kind of mass customization kind of task than the way we think of current quality measures or guidelines for that matter. And I've heard a number of very articulate arguments from critical thinkers in not just our institution, but other institutions really begin to make that argument. So anyway, am I making a coherent point?
You are. My reflection on that is that I personally don't believe that the benefits of parsimony are limited to the necessities of getting a large government program off the ground. I think that there are some intrinsic advantages to being able to speak commonly about things that matter across a wide range of providers. I agree with you that the I agree with you that an electronic health record does provide the opportunity for quality improvement purposes to do stratifications, to do modifications of parameters, to do deep dives. So we have a, you know, measure on an outcome, and in an individual practice, they may want to be able to break that down into 10 separate processes that may be contributing, and to do that quality improvement work on each of those. But it doesn't mean that having a parsimonious measure looking at the outcome of, you know, are your patients, you know, satisfied, or did you close the referral loop, or are you prescribing medication safely, is not incredibly helpful in focusing.
Yeah, I just to give context to my own comment, all those reasons are very, very important. I mean, you got to start someplace, and you got to address the cross-cutting issues. But I just want to make sure that you're hearing my comment that it shouldn't be limited or implied to be limited or misinterpreted, you know, without giving kind of acknowledgement for the fact that that you would hope that to your point, John, that the cardiologists would develop a robust system.
And just one follow-up point in terms of the Gretzky Group's input was very clearly along the lines of the two-dimensional framework, that there are cross-cutting priorities that would allow probably higher likelihood of being parsimonious if they're cross-cutting, but also focusing on the conditions longitudinally over time. And so those two really come together. It's also important, if you look at the other criteria, you actually bring in more of the condition-specific ones when you get at some of the other criteria as opposed to parsimony. So when we presented it in the report, we actually lay out the ratings across all six criteria, and then you can begin to see what matters most to you.
Well, I'll get to that comment.
Okay, good.
Rhonda.
just another question. So does this mean that as we start talking about subspecialty, that it starts now to dictate a new role or a role for subspecialty societies where they would begin to go deeply into their particular area and create their own measures and test them out, and then they... Is there a process for that, or is there a structure for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Helen, in our previous conversation and in your comments and Farzad's, what's the plans for kind of cataloging what's out there? I mean, so it sounds like you did some of that, for this project, and I don't know how many systems you actually looked at, but, you know, in QF we have a catalog of measures, ARC has a catalog of the measures clearinghouse, but it sounds like you were surprised and found a lot of things out there you weren't aware of, and I'm not sure how comprehensive your review was, and what do we know about what's really out there already?
Yeah, I mean, Nalini and Tommy want to talk to some of the work that is still ongoing in terms of a broader environmental scan that's being done. You did already. So part of that is the broader kind of scope, more measured development or specialty society focused. I think what we weren't fully comprehensive because we specifically chose the lens of only going to those places we knew would potentially have measures already built into EHRs. And so that limited our lens to start with. And even then, we got a phenomenal response back, but didn't get something back from about four health systems. So I think it's, I think it adds to the, it's almost like those little babushka dolls. I think we're starting to put these sort of nesting dolls together of this is what the health systems can do, this is what we know is out there in the pipeline that measure developers can do, this is what's really important, and you know something that's not out there and needs to be developed. So I think you start to kind of put that picture together.
Yeah, and I'm certainly aware of what Booz Allen and others are doing. My comment was really more directed to EHR-based, yes. Okay. how comprehensive that scan is at this point.
There are various efforts to catalog, but we're also going to be, with the Health IT Policy Committee, probably putting out a request for information from specific gaps. So people have an opportunity to let us know about what work they're doing.
So another comment on these tracer conditions.
Yeah.
So let's hope that by picking conditions, we don't send a message that one of the enabling, one of the things that EHRs enable us to do is actually deal with real people with multiple conditions.
Oh, gotcha.
And I think the advancing front of innovation and inquiry now is about how to tailor recommendations in individual patients that consider all of those different factors, as opposed to looking at them as a sum of rather crude, in general, population-based rules that we have today,
right.
Heuristics and rules that we have today. As well as and their concomitant crude measures of performance.
Absolutely.
So I hope we're not sending that message. Number one, and then secondly, I'm surprised that your factors. One way to reflect population health priorities and the factors for selecting conditions, if you go that route, mm-hmm. is to look at where they stand in terms of a burden like disability, mortality. And so forth. And I would be, these other factors are important as well, but, I think when I look at the current measures of quality that we have for many of the groups, NCQA or the other groups, the Joint Commission, there are gaps when you look at the conditions that drive disability, for example, in the population in terms of emphasis. So
no question.
I think that would be another way to reflect it. Other comments? Phone comments from those on the phone. Greg, go ahead.
I think another really it's sort of cross-cutting in a way is the introduction on, I think Helen was suggesting this, across multiple measures of new ways of looking at not only change over time, but the degree of control over time and the intensity of control, so that instead of measuring a single threshold, you can, for example, measure the amount of time that someone is in different levels or different degrees of control for something like blood pressure and so on. A second whole area that can be applied across a lot of different kinds of measures is the whole thing of risk adjustment using the Charlson Index or HCCs or any other kind of case or risk adjustment. And finally, I think there's a way, and we've been working on all three of these areas, of bringing together multiple measures in a way that is much more clinically useful, or much more the way clinicians really think about situations when they have a person, say, with heart disease who has 10 risk factors. They don't think of each one in isolation, and so there are ways of sort of calculating the total cardiovascular risk and then looking at how that changes over time, and you could do that again for a number of areas. But I think that there's the electronic thing opens up an incredible vista, not only sort of individual things, but of sort of cross-cutting methodologic changes that can be applied to a whole family of measures.
One thing I'm particularly curious about, and it was Greg's comment about the Charlson Index, which just makes me bristle as an exceedingly crude method for trying to risk-adjust patient outcomes, is that once you start developing more sophisticated HIT systems, you have the ability to introduce clinical factors and developing risk models, coming up with much more fair comparisons across providers of the outcomes achieved from the delivery of care. Is there much in your HIT initiative to really work to either, you know, develop and support the development of more discriminating risk prediction models, or to take where there are good risk prediction models that require clinical data to be able to bring those in? And I, you know, particularly thinking about now we're starting to get to public reporting of 30-day readmission rates after, you know, angioplasty and heart attacks and heart failure hospitalizations, and yet a lot of the determinants aren't standard administratively available data elements that determine, the, you know, that allow you to risk adjust those patients to create fairer comparisons. And is all of these HIT initiatives got an eye on that goal of trying to collect the relevant clinical data to allow more sophisticated comparisons of outcomes across providers so that we can really determine best practices and not penalize? I mean, this is a big issue in disparities because, you know, you end up penalizing and disincentivizing hospitals to take care of the socioeconomically disadvantaged populations or certain racial groups, et cetera.
And I just want to support what John just said about creating a profile of quality and even getting many measures and being able to look at them as a profile requires getting data into the EMR that's standardized often from patients themselves. In other words, having patients fill out standardized forms and things like that, that's the methods that are some of the methods even John's worked on. So this issue of integrating patient-reported data that can be reported in a standardized way with electronic medical record data from the clinician's input is really critical and something we've been working on, and it's got many challenges, but I just think it's an important thing to look forward, especially as it relates to not only risk adjustment, but outcomes measurements and some of the other things we've been discussing.
I'll just make one point. This is Helen. Christy, it's not so much an issue of whether it's in the HIT space. I think it's really where measurement's going, and we're increasingly seeing measures coming to us already kind of people are beginning to think about how do I get the key pieces of data I need from the EHR to get at clinical risk. Just a measure, for example, just came forward, ICU mortality out of UCSF, where, again, very much this pulled directly out of the electronic system. So I think over the next year or so, you're going to increasingly see more of that push towards saying, what can you bring in that's already specified or could be specified for an EHR? Get it, that good, you know, just pulling in, for example, the actual ejection fraction would have a remarkable impact on some of our CHF measures.
My point was that parallel to the electronic medical record, methodologies that allow the patient to provide information in a continuous way seems like a big enough deal that it's not going to come from existing data and just figuring out how to link. It's actually requiring a new way of collecting data that can then be integrated. So that's why I raised it as a special issue.
So I'm going to take Rhonda's comment, then I'm going to ask if anybody from the public who's sitting here in the room wants to make a comment, and then from the public. Rhonda?
I'm sorry, maybe beating a dead horse here, but I am getting more and more concerned. John, with what you talked about, in order to accomplish what you're talking about, you really need to be able to aggregate data across several different systems. And I guess I'm a little bit concerned. I'm not clear. Maybe I'm just not understanding. Is there a plan to do that, or is that kind of left out for 10,000 flowers to bloom and whatever happens, whatever happens? I'm kind of concerned.
So I think that there is two steps to the to this process. The first is exploratory analyses and kind of, in a way, analogous to hypothesis generating. And then there's application of algorithms once determined, which, you know, more like hypothesis confirming. So I think, you know, Mayo Clinic probably has enough data to be able to be useful in terms of looking at some of those risk assessments using the data they have. I think, you know, Kaiser could do a lot. I think there's organizations around the country that have an incredible amount of detailed, rich clinical data that could be used to develop those algorithms. I don't think that that in and of itself requires us to aggregate information outside of source systems to be able to answer that question. And if we do so, it would be in the context of research rather than an operational system. The second turn of the screw, though, is once those algorithms are determined, to be able to convey them and communicate them unambiguously so that source systems could calculate them and use them to generate the information and to incorporate them into their systems. And again, that, too, I don't think requires necessarily a centralized architecture. So there are efficiencies, some may say, to centralized architectures. There's also risks. And I wouldn't conclude that the absence of a centralized data model for the Nationwide Health Information Network is a death blow to the ability to do quality measurement.
I would just, getting to the data aggregation point, I do think I'm just going to speak from the Medicaid perspective. I mean, Medicaid agencies from the Medicaid incentive piece will be getting data that they will most likely, obviously, be able to aggregate and analyze, and how they share that information back with the provider community, I think, is to be determined. But that's one, you know, state source that I think is readily available. And then you have local community organizations that we all are aware of that will be very eager to help create portals for physicians to send their meaningful use data to be able to aggregate at a community level. So I think that there are entities out there that will be interested in doing this. It's just not in the reg that says thou shalt do X, Y, and Z. We're sort of letting the market respond.
Ira?
A couple things. So I've been a patient at the Mayo Clinic. They have more data. It's incredible. But they don't share it with Abbott Northwestern, where I've also been a patient. They don't share it with my other providers. Okay, it's as simple as that. And I think what Ron is saying and what Nikki just said is, well, is this up in the air? I can tell you. Let's look at Hospital Compare. Interesting database. Really, I guess, set up for patients to go in and say, and they can pick three choices. That's it. You can go three times. So we get a large contract from the federal government to aggregate all this information for various subgroups and so forth. Other groups get, I mean, is that what's going to happen? Or even if it isn't in the reg, do we need to think through, is there a value to have some external use for this information rather than just, I think internal quality improvement is important, but what about the external use?
You know, this is obviously a point that that needs a lot of thought and a lot of discussion. I do think it's important to separate out what we're talking about carefully. And there's different use cases. There's different issues that are being put on the table, and I think somehow concatenated together, that should be dissected out further. There is an issue of being able to do comparisons of quality between different providers. For a consumer who wants to say, what is the quality score for this group versus that group? Okay, that does not require a centralized data model. What that requires is sharing of summarized quality measures, which is what we are getting to, for example, with Hospital Compare. The second issue is interoperability and you as a patient having your information move from Mayo to somewhere else. That's absolutely part of what the ONC agenda is. That, too, does not require a centralized data model. There's a third issue, which is generation of risk scores and analysis of data for creating more complicated algorithms. That does require there to be stores of comprehensive clinical information across multiple sites. It doesn't require necessarily a national data store. So
again, I think we have to be very careful as we're having these discussions. There is, I think, at times a natural inclination to say, if we just had all the data in one place, it would solve all our problems, all of our problems. And that rarely comes true, either for operational reasons, for technical reasons, for data ownership reasons, for privacy reasons, for cost reasons, and so forth. So I do think it's an important conversation to have. It's likely to be a hybrid model where there is some level of aggregation. The question is, what is the appropriate level of aggregation, and does one, you know, data warehouse meet all needs?
And I would also suggest that it's somewhat off our track for our main purpose here. So I think we've actually had the opportunity to explore a number of issues that are related to our main purpose, and I'm sure that Farzad and Helen have heard us, heard those concerns. But to have further discussion about data models and collection is really not what we're here about. So I think at this point, if there are other comments on different topics, I look at it, but I really want to move to the public comment for people in the room. If you have any comments, questions, and then I want to move to the phone. But I'll give the committee one last shot at something different, not something that we've been talking about here, because that's probably not where we want to go. And I really appreciate the conversation and the very careful presentation and discussion. I think that's helped our understanding. People in the room, we have some people, for the people on the phone, we have some folks in the room. Any comments or questions? Operator, on the phone.
Juan, if you do have a question.
Okay, go ahead with it. Is there a question on the phone?
No questions at this time.
Okay, all right. So I guess at this point, I want to...
George, if I may make one comment, in terms of the exercise that I think which is to come, from our... You know, I talked about how what we're doing could help inform or at least have resonances for what you're doing. But from our perspective, it would be less helpful would be if there were, you know, 28 new measures for care coordination, and none for safety. So in a sense, the, you know, having two or three, what the end result that we want to get to on the meaningful use is to have two to three really great illustrative cross-cutting measures for each of the domains. And I don't know if that is, you know, part of what the end result of this of your process is going to be, but I certainly hope so.
I think if you look at the one, we're going to end up with a ranking of our domains and then our subdomains, and then the domains that you'll see in that ranking, how they're stratified and how they relate to the domains. So you'll be able to actually pick out the most important ranked issue in each domain, and the second one, if that's the way you choose to use the data. I would think that would be the answer, but I'll look to my methodologists. Yeah. So I would hope it would support that purpose, the way we're going to go about this exercise. It's intended to support that purpose, if that's the way you choose to use it. So I think we're ready. Okay, Alini.
So before we head into voting, I wanted to just tee up a couple key items. We revised the worksheets based on our discussion. So we've added the new domain number two's name. We put those on folks' chairs. When you came back from lunch, you'll see that we have system infrastructure supports.
So it looks like this, but the other one looks like this too. So if you look down and you look at the second bullet on your sheet, it should say system infrastructure supports. Not something else. Okay.
And on the second page.
Everybody got that? You got two of them. Take the other one, throw it on the floor, or tear it up.
And then on the second page, we've added the new subdomains under domain 2. And we've also moved under domain 6, the pop health domain, some of the subdomains, pop health outcomes and community index. So folks want to take a final look at this to make sure that we've captured the discussion appropriately.
Turn to page 2. which is the list of domains with the sub-bullets underneath it. And now we're not having new conversation or new ideas. We're just looking to make sure this reflects our previous conversation. So I'm interested in feedback. Did we capture, did we do what we say we that everybody thought we were going to do last time?
So then as we enter into our first vote, which will be the domain voting, we ask that you first fill out your worksheet, the new worksheet on your voting for just domains, page one, and you will have three votes, and you can do multiple votes. So you may put all your votes on one domain or two votes on one domain. And then what we'll do is, for folks on the phone, if you can email us your worksheets, we will put the dot voting on for you on the flip charts. And for those in the room, we have left a little square near each domain for you to put your dots for voting purposes. And then when we finish with domains, we'll tally up the votes and move to the subdomain voting.
So we're just dealing with page one right now. Is that right, Malini?
Correct.
And the idea here is that you would do a little work at your place and write down your three choices in the spaces provided, and then any issues that, as you go through this process, come up, put them on the lines below. And that's the step we're taking now, right? And then we'll be getting up and putting dots. But you're going to tell us when to do that?
As soon as folks are finished and they're ready, they can then go ahead and put their dots on. The color of the dot is not important, but no more than three dots, because otherwise you won't have enough dots for your subdomain voting.
So
why are we doing it both ways?
Yeah.
Well, to give you a chance to think. But if you don't want to, if you want to go right to the booth,
we wanted folks to reflect their key issues, because you're...
Yeah.
Because you're...
What I would say is that as far as consistency is concerned, I mean, the exercise, if you're talking about the exercise was meant to inform the conversation. And I would think it would be, hopefully, however you're thinking about this exercise at this point is informed by our process this morning and doesn't need to be consistent necessarily with your earlier judgments. Now, as far as these sheets and where you put your dots, that would be helpful to the staff, consistency from in that point. And also helpful to the staff as you do this, any thoughts that occur to you, if you write them down, that will be useful to the staff in terms of making sure those issues are reflected in the report.
We will be capturing all your key issues in the report for November, so that's the point of the worksheet, in addition to just putting down the domain voting.
Any three. You pick the color, but only three. Can we put all three on one?
And you may put all three on one.
Can we put one on three? Yep, right.
Go ahead. Our time period is what we discussed earlier, which is more short-term in nature,
right.
And we'll do a longer-term via email or something.
That's correct.
Okay,
so you should be thinking about 2010-11 priorities. Right.
Did you want to speak to that? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. And we do have Helen Burstyn available if folks have questions on the disparities, sensitive domains, and subdomains. That was the red highlighted sheet that we had handed out during our previous discussion.
Yeah, so it looks like this. If it's going to affect your voting and you want to think about disparities, the ones in red are the disparity-sensitive ones. So you should consider that as your voting. Okay, let's go to it. So, all right. So we don't have quite all the votes in, apparently, but we have most of them in. And so we can, one, take a look, if you will, at where the dots are aggregating, realizing that we've got one dot more or two dots more?
Two people.
Yeah. So we got maybe a six-dot swing potential here. So this is directional, I guess, in terms of the results. And interesting kind of spread of the dots. Resource use getting the most. Care coordination second, looks like. Health status third. Safety fourth. domain 6, 5th, and then the systems infrastructure, population health, and then palliative care in that order, sort of how they structured out. What I like to do go ahead and do the subdomain voting at this point, and then then it's going to take another period of time to collate that. It's a little more complex, and so we'll have another opportunity for a break, maybe a more formal break at that point. So are you ready for that? Same process. We've got a worksheet for that is three sheets in.
So page 2 of your worksheet will have the revised subdomains, and page 3 of the worksheet has the key issues for you to provide any insights or considerations as part of your voting.
So you want us to develop the top 9 among all of these? Is that right?
And that's correct. You have 9 votes for subdomains, very similar to the homework, and you may put multiple votes on one subdomain, on any subdomain.
Subdomain. And we also want your thoughts in terms of what you think as you go through the process and want to collect that when you're done, right? Mm-hmm.
Correct. We'll be collecting worksheets after the subdomain voting.
Okay. You all ready to go? Okay. So those of you on the phone, we're voting. You can start doing that now, Christy. All righty. So now this is the part of the meeting. We've had our vote, and now we have the results. In the paper in front of you, you have the final domain results. And I think we're about to get hard copy of the subdomain results, but they're printing and providing that now. And so in 5 minutes or so, we'll have that. But at this point in the agenda, what we want to do is look at the results and reflect upon whether it makes sense or not and gather comments and discussion about our results. So, and then decide whether we're happy with it or not. I mean, because we can do this again. This is not necessarily final. I look at it as iterative. It might be final if we're satisfied with it. But so this is the reflective part of the process. And I'm interested in people who want to talk. But actually, during this part, I'm actually going to ask everybody to offer a comment and go around the room, because I want to make sure that everybody has a shot at this one. But I see that you, in particular, want to make a comment. So why don't you go ahead?
I just wanted to say that just looking at the ranking, it just troubles me, as you said earlier, George, palliative care, when it's put into the mix with everything.
Yeah.
And here it didn't get any votes. And it's so critically important.
Yes.
And I just hope that our final report will reflect that tension of where to put your votes, knowing how important it is to people and their families, and yet it falls to the bottom.
So. I think that's reflects my own views as well. I'm glad that you said that. Okay, why don't we go to you, and then we'll come back up here. Go ahead.
Okay, seeing health status and safety processes and outcomes tied at 3rd, if I could switch my votes, I didn't put them all on safety. I'd like to do that, which would bump safety into a clear 3rd.
As far as that?
Two thoughts. One is wondering if the shared decision-making might capture some of the palliative care advanced directives issues. Just wondering if it, maybe it was the... So one idea is potentially listing it under there, which clearly has a lot of votes. And then the second thought was around adherence, medication adherence. I wasn't quite clear where that fits. I think there's been discussion of this in the past, but wondering what people think about where that's being captured. Is that being captured under care coordination, or is that being captured under somewhere else?
It's a subdomain, isn't it? It's actually, where is it now? Which?
Yeah, so I'll hold that till later.
Hold
sorry.
Until we get the final tally. And I think this is actually the flip side of not having conceptual mutual exclusivity on our categories, actually. And the advantage, I think, that Farzad points out is the fact that you can get at some very key concepts in palliative care through a lot of, I think, through the subdomain as well as some of the other domains which are more highly prioritized here. So, Ira, we'll start with you and just walk around the room since Farzad just offered a comment.
It's sort of fascinating. We're twice as interested in how many resources we're using as compared to the outcomes we accomplish with that. So I would shift it around a little bit from earlier, but I just find that quite interesting given the context where the environment we're currently in. And otherwise, I think it's fairly predictable. My own personal view is that I believe palliative care is important, but I just don't think it's at the same breadth or scope as the many of the other domains, and I think that's why it didn't get the votes. And with a vote of zero, I think it's better off, quite honestly, not having it as a domain rather than listing as a domain with zero votes, which would say nobody cared about it. And it's easier to talk about it as an important issue, I think, rather than listing it with zero votes, which is a little bit embarrassing. So, but otherwise, I think it's fairly predictable. I'm quite comfortable with it.